This is the Valley Outdoor Show, and we are glad you guys are with us today. We've got lots of fun talking about a little dog training. We're talking about some lake trout fry that were found in an area that I had no idea that they were in. And I think you will be interested as well. So stay tuned. Lots more to come. Ashkenam Resort on Ash River in northern Minnesota is a destination you're looking for. Ashkenam offers everything for the angler or family vacation with access to Lake Cabotogama, Namekin Lake, and the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. Thousands of acres of clean, refreshing water all available to you. This is your destination for your next fishing trip or family vacation. Check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. Do I need to say walleyes, northern pike, and crappies?
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Well, hello, Ava.
How's it going?
It's going well. Good to have you here this bright and early morning.
Yeah, it's always good to be here on a weekend.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes.
No, all the time. It's a privilege.
And an honor?
Yes.
Wow, I feel terrific. You made me feel great. That's a good thing. You know, the nice part, though, I will say, when you get up on cold or cooler mornings, there's fog coming off the water, and then you know the day is going to warm up a little bit. It's going to be kind of nice out. Those mornings are just awesome.
Yeah, you know, I actually really enjoy cloudy mornings because that's when you get the pretty sunrises and sunsets.
You mean partly cloudy?
Yeah, right.
I like that. I'm more of a sunny morning guy. Tournament days when it's sunny out, there's odds are you can have some nice days in the water.
Odds are.
Well, I've had days when it's sunny out and it's miserable and right. Wind is blowing, but everything depends on the wind as well. So that's one of those moments you just you like getting up early. It's just kind of nice.
Yeah, it is nice.
Not everybody's out. The lack of commotion.
We're here for the morning, people.
Yeah. Well, speaking of wind, today's little tactic slash tip. You know, often people talk to me when I do fishing seminars, and they're like, you know, I just hate fishing in the wind. I try to find, you know, place out of the wind, and I just don't want to do it. I hate fishing. Well, as the saying goes, suck it up, buttercup. The wind side of the lakes are generally where the fish are going to be. That's the thing to keep in mind.
Okay, but why? Why does wind
because they turn up the bottom. The invertebrates and the various other bait fish also become active, and that's where the other fish will hang out because the bait is active and pushed into these areas.
All right.
And it clouds up the water, so it reduces light penetration. So there's a lot of elements that go into that side of the fence, and that's really one of the big things to keep in mind. So things to keep in mind when you're trying to fish those things, those areas, the wind areas. Now, let's talk about fishing in the wind. Advantage, if you have a decent bow mount, put it on spot lock. If you have some type of anchoring spot lock device with the bow mount, that's the ultimate time to use it. Now, what you may find is, really quickly, that your bow mount may be too short if it keeps coming out of the water. Thus, when you have those scenarios, understand you may want to have a person move to the front of the boat, and then you simply cast from the front of the boat. One person casts from the back of the boat as the bow will be forward to the wind and the targeted areas will be behind you. That's the way you want to set it up.
Right.
You never want to try and cast into the wind.
Doesn't work well.
No. It always ends up badly. Wind knots, et cetera, it's a bad thing. Okay, so setting that up is the best way to do it. Now, understanding that you need to target areas that are going to be target-rich environments, meaning small points, areas that are going to be holding fish, etc. Look at those spots. Look at cups, areas of structure. Use your imaging, side imaging to find those. Don't have to drive over them, but make sure you use your side imaging to find out if there's fish on those spots. And understand as well, I found this out on Devil's Lake as a prime example, residual wind locations, meaning if the wind is blowing into a spot for, let's say, 2 or 3 days straight, the fish are going to remain in those key areas for probably about a day. So target those areas. You'll still be able to fish them, and they'll still have active fish. They're not going to move immediately. The bait's still there, but you need to make sure that you focus on those spots and hit the key spots and do it effectively. And that's really the key point. If you position yourself for success, meaning if you got the equipment to work it correctly, if you set yourself up on the spot correctly and use the correct baits, you will be successful in the wind. So let the wind be your friend. It's a real big step that you need to understand. When the wind blows, you can win. You All can right. do really well.
Embrace so, it.
Exactly. Because if you don't, guess what? Half your days you're going to say, forget it, I can't catch anything, and then you're already defeated. So understand, the wind can be your friend.
Okay? All right.
More big fish in windy days that I never thought I'd catch anything than I can even still believe. It on Erie, 25 miles an hour, 25, 8 miles an hour blown out of the northeast, right down the lake in 8 to 10 footers, and I had bigger fish than I've ever had, ever. And you just were trolling with the wind. You take your time. Work
All
well.
Right.
So.
Sounds good.
Jumping into things that make you go, An Indiana man was sentenced with the Lacey Act violation for paddle fish trafficking. As part of Operation Charlie, a joint federal task force focused on stopping illegal commercial fishing, the gentleman was sentenced to federal court for illegally harvesting paddle fish in the Ohio River. This gentleman admitted that in 2015 through 2016, he entered territorial waters of Ohio and the Ohio River and illegally harvested 107 paddle fish, which he transported through Kentucky to his shop in Indiana. The eggs, known as roe, were extracted from the female paddlefish and rinsed, then processed into caviar and packaged into plastic tubes for transport. The remaining paddlefish carcasses were then carved into what is known as bullets and boxed for transport with 25 units in each. Caviar and bullets were stored in a freezer located on site. Most inventory was sold and transported to two vendors in New York, admitted to filing false monthly harvesting reports, claiming he caught the fish in Kentucky water. Needless to say, that was a bad deal.
I guess
and,
so.
And these fish are pretty immense. They grow up to 6 feet long and 100 pounds, very slow to mature, and they get about 500,000 eggs each and spawn every 2 to 3 years. But sad, sad story. Definitely a fine coming on with him, $65,000 restitution. And, he's going to have all of his fishing licenses revoked. So, yeah. One of those things.
Are there eggs common?
That's where sturgeon eggs are basically caviar.
All right.
So, yep. But I'm glad they got that taken care of, got that out of the way. And we got the first half of the show out of the way. We're going to be coming back and talking with Jack Lilica, and he is at Prairie Peak Kennels. Little dog training coming right up. Well, Ava, we always like the people to welcome us at this point to check out a couple different places.
We have a few different places, yes.
We have places.
We do.
We have stuff and places. The first stuff we have is on this place, which is thevalleyoutdoors.com, thevalleyoutdoors.com. Second place is Facebook, right?
Yeah, we're on there too.
Yeah, we're in two places, lots of stuff in both places. And there's going to be more as time goes on, but please feel free to check it out. Links, et cetera, are on The Valley Outdoors, where you can plug in and see whatever your state has as far as any type of activity, as well as seasons and licenses, et cetera. So pop onto our interactive map, and it is nationwide. Nationwide. I should have echo on that one. Nationwide.
Yeah, nationwide. Wide.
Yep. Don't you like that? Wasn't that great?
Oh, we were right on.
Well, who I have on the line right now is probably not very impressed with this, but that's okay. He is the owner of Prairie Peak Kennels. It is good to have you with us, Jack. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you as well. A lot of cool stuff. You got a new breed that we're going to talk about a little bit. And a couple things that I thought were very intriguing to me when we had talked off air. And it's involving dog training. Now, I know dog training can be, what would you think, Ava? It can be a mystery, kind of like this magical thing. What do dog trainers do? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It becomes this, wow, you're just like the dog whisperer kind of thing because you figured all this stuff out. But Jack, what you're fortunate enough to be able to do is you've been working with some people to get them to actually learn how to be a dog trainer, as I understand.
Yeah, we've been training for 12 years, and my employees just started to kind of watch what I was doing. They expressed, interest in it, excitement when the owners would be excited to pick their dog up, and they read the positive reviews, and they just kind of got attracted to it. And so I started just letting them help me a little bit. And before you know it, they want a career in dog training. It started with two last year. And this year, five additional young individuals, we're talking 16 years old, 17 years old, 18, 19 year old individuals have approached me. So now between our two locations, we have seven dog trainers that are at some stage of professional development. And it's just been really fun to mentor and guide. And actually, I'm taking a step back. I'm not doing all the sessions, multiple sessions every day anymore. I'm starting to just, let them do it now and just mentor them occasionally. It's been really rewarding for everybody.
So Jack, wouldn't you kind of say that these younger trainers are almost easier to train?
They have such a clean slate, Yes, they come out of high school, and a lot of people look for an animal career. They love caring for animals. A lot of times people will look at becoming a vet tech or a veterinarian. Sometimes that just doesn't pan out for one reason or another, but I think people need to know animal training, behavior modification is a viable career and something that is not necessarily advertised at your local career fair.
I would have to agree with that. And I think the other thing that's a big reward as well is seeing the results that you guys put out there when you get done with a week or whatever the program length is. And, of course, you said that. The kids really like seeing the results when the people come to pick up their dogs, and it's such an exciting moment when they see such a change. It's the same dog, but the behavior has been changed dramatically. So how do you look at jumping into that? Somebody looks at bringing a dog to you and they think, oh, maybe I don't need it. I can figure it out. What are kind of some of the top three things you think would be either an indicator? And then once you get at the top three indicators, what are the top three things that you really think are people are looking for when they bring their dog in?
Well, I don't think people realize their dog's potential sometimes. If they just kind of accept their dog's behavior, they don't realize all of the other freedoms that they could give their dog. So if your dog is an on-leash dog and not allowed off of a leash, I would just encourage you to seek some training help. A dog off a leash has just the best opportunity to live in that primal instinct of just running around and exploring, but maybe they can be cooperative enough to come when called. And that's what we accomplish every single time, like without fail. Dogs, they will come when called after they go through, a training program. And so if your dog is leash pulling, jumping, digging, chewing, barking, kennel accidents in the house, any of that, you don't have to live with your dog and accept those behaviors. It really is not that hard to just communicate in a little different way that they resonate with, and they're happier for it as well.
And I think it actually makes both the dog owner and the dog happier, because the dog doesn't get yelled at. The owner doesn't have to yell at the dog or try to reprimand or just throw up their hands and say, okay, I'm done. This is it. I got nothing left. And I just, it is what it is. So that's a, it's a bonus all the way around. So that's really a big help. Do you, how many dog training sessions do you do for, do you do quite a bit of hunting dogs as well?
I do general obedience and hunting. You know, I'll train a little Morky Poo or a little Golden Doodle or Bernedoodle. You know, those are some real popular breeds these days and they need a lot of help. But yeah, of course we will. We'll train hunting dogs, do like a little intro to hunting, you know, course as well, so they can get started, you know, with their prey drive under control and have fun doing it. We don't do a lot of formal training, you know, at our facility, a lot of field trial stuff, things like that. That's more specialty training. We cater to the big, you know, the big group of people, which are the general obedience, you know, family dogs that are, you know, pulling on your kids, you know, slippers and hats, you know, and just getting into mischief.
Which is a key element to the whole thing. There's no question about it. That's a key element is having a dog surviving in the house or having the kids survive with the dog in the house or all three surviving together.
Well, and a lot of hunting dogs are actually family dogs too.
Exactly.
Yeah, some hunting dogs do not do very well, you know, in the family. You know, they're either hunting or they're getting into stuff in the house because they're just geared for that extra gear. But the small Munsterlander breed that we have is a versatile dog that's really great in the home as well. Have you guys ever heard of the small Munsterlander before?
I have not. Now, describe it?
And this is the best part, Jack. So I knew this you were going to bring this up today, and I'm like, I'm just waiting to see Ava's like, what?
Well, I'm a big dog fan, so.
Yep, she is. So
fill her in.
The
Munsterlander, you could call him Munsterlander, too.
Okay.
It's a European breed of generally a German descent. They started right after the war breeding again. So back in 1912, the Munsterlander Club was created in Europe. They've been around for a long time, but they're not, you know, the main dog that people are aware of. So they've been around if you are in the right groups and in the right networks, people know about them. But really what people don't know is, of course I'm biased, but I don't know of a better breed for all around hunting. So they're a medium-sized breed that has a tail, beautiful tail like a setter, but they are a pointing breed. They have a soft coat like a Brittany or a Springer or even a setter, medium dense. But they are a pointing and retrieving breed. They will be a pointing upland dog and a duck hunting waterfowl or goose hunting dog even. And then they're also a tracking breed as well. You can use your dog to track a wounded deer with great success. I know many people who do that in the fall. But they come into the house and they have this off switch and they just relax. They're not bouncing off the walls and, you know, causing chaos like some other breeds, you know, have a tendency to do so. So really it's the best of all worlds. And there's a small Munsterlander, you know, group on Facebook and our website has info. It's a really great breed that people usually, when they switch to a Munsterlander, they never switch back to any other breed.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at a picture of them. They look like a mix of a German short hair and like a Brittany. That's what they look like to me. But just looking them up, their temperament says, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Attentive, affectionate, intelligent, strong-willed, happy, and trainable.
That's
sounds like a perfect dog.
That's me.
That short hair, you know, but they have a nice soft coat. That's enjoyable. You know, in the home, less shedding than a German short hair, but short hairs are versatile dogs. They're good family dogs in general.
But so they're high strung.
They are similar, but they do have distinct differences.
Yeah, well, it's like, it's the patterning, you know, with the large patches and then the speckling is what reminds me of the German short hair, but it's got it almost looks like a Brittany head and hair.
Yes, we actually started breeding Brittany's, and we love our Brittany's, and we still breed our Brittany's. But I just this Munsterlander does more. They do all the water that a Brittany doesn't do.
Yep, you know? My dad's got a Brittany, and then we've got a lab German Shepherd. So
well, I think one of the things people find with the German Shorthairs is they're relatively high strung, and they
well, they're a working dog for sure. Yeah.
So bringing that as a family dog oftentimes is rather difficult, as they're sometimes can be a bull in a china closet. They're not necessarily chill.
Right.
That's what I have also seen in from experience and trained many clients. The Munsterlander, if you don't engage with them in the house, they're just going to go lay down like an old farm dog on the front porch, you know? And then the moment you engage with them, they're ready to go again. Like if you decide to like read a book or eat dinner, they're just going to go chill somewhere instead of always like nosing you for something or barking out the window and just being kind of crazy. It's really a unique thing this breed specifically has, is that off switch.
You mean like, hey, look at squirrel, bright lights.
Yeah. Or... you don't have to wait for him to be 8 years old to chill out. So.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Right.
Well, Jack, I can't thank you enough for joining us. This is awesome. I think we've learned a lot about new breeds and what you guys do up there at Prairie Peak Kennels. And we will have the access to the website on our website, prairiepeakkennels.com. It'll be on our link on the Valley Outdoors. And again, Jack, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. Thank you, too.
You bet. We'll talk soon. And we are going to be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. So, Ava, you're kind of dialed in on that Munsterlander.
It's a German breed.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Checkmate there. And yeah, I mean, it's got pretty much everything that you're looking for if you're looking for that house dog and hunting dog. So
nothing wrong with that.
Check them out.
Yeah, pretty cool deal. You can check out our link again to Prairie Peak Kennels on our website so you can see that. Click on it and learn more about the Munsterlander and other stuff. I mentioned earlier in the show, we're going to talk a little bit about a fish that was found fry that was found in Lake Erie. This particular wild lake trout fry was found in Lake Erie for the first time in over 60 years. This is a huge story. The New York Department of Environmental Conservation, or DEC, has announced a significant marker in decades-long quest to recover the lake trout population in Lake Erie. Last month, the agency's Fisheries Research Unit discovered the presence of wild lake trout fry, confirming that the species is once again naturally reproducing in the lake after being extirpated in 1965. Today marks a key milestone in the restoration of lake trout in Lake Erie after six decades of significant investments. And really, the DEC commissioner said this is a phenomenal Great Lakes story of recovery, testament to perseverance of the researchers and the biologists and the partner agencies who worked tirelessly. And I think this is a big thing for me because lake trout, also known as Mackinaw, it's the largest species of freshwater char. They can grow upwards of 50 inches, 75 pounds, and they prefer deeper depths, so they're preferring the eastern side. But decline has been going on since the 1700s and 1800s. It decimated the fishery. The 30s and 1930s commercial operations had ceased in the lake. Fishery was still impacted by habitat degradation and invasive species. They were considered in 1965 completely gone. So what a great story that is. And, you know, Lake Erie, I consider that to be probably one of the biggest success stories that I've heard of in years. You probably have heard when they talked about some of the rivers in Lake Erie that were burning from all the flow coming in, and they had been, literally it was on fire. The river was on fire from all of the runoff, et cetera.
I remember that.
Yep. And really the lake was almost dead. And when you go out there now, it is considered to be one of the best walleye and perch fisheries that I have ever seen. And that is one of the crucial differences. It's through conservation, of course, but really the way that they've cleaned the lake up has really done it all, because they've got amazing big fish constantly, and they're growing faster than anything you've seen. So you can eat the big fish because the growth is so fast. I mean, when you can eat a cheek, you can eat the jaw. Have you ever had fish jaw or walleye jaw?
Not jaw. I've had cheek.
The jaws are amazing in those bigger fish. It's unbelievable. See, I mean, you're going to Lake Erie, if you tell somebody you're going to eat an 8 or 9 pound fish here, they think you're crazy. But out there, that's a viable fish to eat. The growth is so fast, and they have so many of them. They are so plentiful, and they figured out a regulation method that makes it successful. And I think you're going to find that happening out in Pepin as well, with the regulations they put on. You can only get one over 20 inches.
So right.
It's going to be pretty cool. So, speaking of pretty cool, amazing how the show flies by.
I know.
Thanks, you guys, for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. Check us out next week. We'll be here for Ava, myself, and Don, who's not here, but we
miss him.
We miss him anyway. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Talk soon. Bye-bye.